So, as I said, I'll be introducing what we have done in France. We have here Slash, who is also part of a small ISP like mine in France, small non-profit ISP. Our organizations are in fact a copy of an old one, an old non-profit ISP, and it's the oldest ISP still in activity in France. It's a non-profit one. It's called FDN, for French Data Network. It exists since 1992, and it is providing access to the internet since then. Hi.
Okay.
And so, until 2005, they were providing access to the internet with 56k modem, and they reopened one line to repair the internet during the Egypt blackout, as Telecomings have done also. So they provided a way to communicate at this moment for Egyptians and all countries around the world. So FDN exists since 1992. There are 400 members of the organization. 200 people, or at least 200 lines are opened at the moment, so there are, and so it works since then. It's the oldest one, and it was gaining many interest when Adopi Law was discussed in France. I suppose you, Adopi, does ring a bell to you, all of you. It's a three strikes law to put people who share culture in prison, or at least cut the internet. And so FDN saw so many people coming in the organization, and it was growing and growing, and so the idea came to propagate, to spread the scheme behind FDN, and here we started with other people to make our own internet access providers in a local way in France. So I've started one year ago in the center of France, in Corrèze. So my ISP is called Internet Libre en Corrèze, Free Internet in Corrèze. Slash is a member of one other.
And Lorraine Data Network.
So in the east of France. And we all now are sharing the same, how can I say that, for Federation again. We are all grouping together to build a sort of structure, to have one voice and to push our political message. Because we are definitely have a political message behind what we are doing. So it is called Federation FDN. We have now 8 associations part of this federation. So 8 internet access providers, all non-profit, all giving access to the internet in a neutral way, and so on. Everywhere in France. And so I'm here to tell people that it's possible, because in France, when you explain that you are building an internet service provider, people tend to call the cops and tell, hey, it's crazy, somewhere. They don't believe you, and it's possible to do this, and at least in France. And I don't know if it's possible to do it in other countries. I don't know if it's if we have a particular model in France. The market is maybe made to and in a certain way that it's possible for us to exist, but I think also it's possible outside of France, but I'm not sure. So maybe others have here our experiences. I know that in Sweden there is a pirate ISP, and maybe someone here knows about pirate ISP more than me and will tell maybe something about that.
Yeah, I'm into non-profit. Swedish bird.
It's a non-profit?
No.
It's not a non-profit?
No. He was asking about another Swedish ISP, but which was a profit one. The pirate ISP is, to my knowledge, a non-profit ISP. The guy who's running that is somewhere around the camp, so you could ask him later.
Okay. We have Sirius Tubes, so that's almost the same organization as Pirate ISP. They are running for the same goal, it's the same guy that controls Pirate ISP now. It was different before.
Okay, so
but there are non-profit ISPs in Sweden too. It's totally possible there.
Cool.
We have to make a difference between ISPs not making a profit and non-profit, though.
Yeah, of course, but they are actually non-profit.
And I definitely want to give to spread the idea and to make people know that it's possible. And I think we need more of these structures, as we see just a few minutes ago on the Telecomix channel and Telecom Paketet. Some were commenting the headlines about UK government maybe going to cut access to Twitter and Facebook and so on. But if you are a non-profit ISP, how can the government tell you what to do? You certainly don't want to obey. They just ask you because they. What means they have to control you? It's kind of different to be a non-profit, to be a profit one, a commercial one, where you just obey to profit and that's all. We listen to you when you're saying you're doing it for the rules or just because internet is important to you. That's an important thing, I think. And the other side of giving access to the internet, making it possible, what we are doing, an important thing of what we are doing is to push the idea that it's the internet exists only if it's free, open and neutral. If it's not neutral, it's not the internet anymore. And so we are trying to do this also to have voices to tell this and to show, okay, we are ISPs, we are providing neutral access to the internet, it's possible and it's definitely cool. So you should listen to us, we know what we are talking about, and so it kind of creates a dissonant voice in the concert of the commercial ISPs who have their entries in the government and can easily make political representants think that the tubes are going to collapse because people are sharing more and more and because they are doing voice over IP on their phones and some bullshit like this. And so it's important to do this. And I had the opportunity to contribute to a mission, a parliamentary mission, because I was a founder of a president of a non-profit ISP, of an ISP. We are operators. We have we are recognized as operators, and so we have the one voice like others, even though we are smaller, yes, but we are doing the same thing, and we are using the same tubes. We are providing access to the internet to citizens like you and me, and so it's important to use this mean of communication towards the politicians and towards the media. I don't know if you have questions, feedbacks.
What is concretely the process to what kind of steps did you go through to become an ISP?
To become an ISP is, in France it's quite easy. You just declare to the regulation authority, which is called RCEP. You say, okay, hello, I am an ISP. You fill the form and you send this. And you,
my point was maybe it's not as simple in other countries.
Yeah, maybe it's not as simple. I know that in France, a few years ago, you had to pay a big amount of money to be able to be called an operator, to be an ISP actually, and so. It disappears after free. We have an ISP in France called Free, which is an outsider, and that changed quite a bit the frame of the ISP market. They are doing things for a few years now, and so. I don't know. Well, yes, maybe in other countries you need to pay a big amount of money to declare you an operator. But I don't know if it can prevent you from having contracts to actually being an ISP, which is the important thing. Apart from that, just filling a form, providing access to the internet means being an autonomous system. Internet is made of 30 or 40,000 autonomous systems. So network of networks. And to be one, you have to tell the RIPE in Europe, you have to fill a form and so on. You have to. The technical difficulty is about joining the last mile. It's the last mile between the subscriber and the infrastructure, who is very, very expensive. And it's the difficulty is having contracts to use the last mile plus the backhaul of the operators to bring the network from the subscriber to your equipment, where you announce your IPs, where you announce your routes, and where you connect to the other networks that form the internet. So I don't know. Maybe it's difficult in other countries. I don't know if there are. There are operators providing in their offer this backhauling contract. In France, we have some who are doing this, so we can, even with small money, can have these contracts. And we have our equipments in data centers and so on. We need two routers and more at the beginning. You don't need many things, and the infrastructure, the technical thing is not that difficult, and it's not that expensive, at least less than what people think usually. And in France we have something like 12 or 20, depending on the state of of what they are doing, that are providing access to the internet in a different way. Some are in majority using wireless, I lost my words. But by extending ADSL. lines in a house where you have a friend and put a wireless antenna on the roof and another antenna in the village which is not connected actually to the to high bandwidth, and you can in this way extend the lines and provide access to the internet to those people who are in what we call the white zones. So some are doing this, some are using fiber. For now we are just using existing infrastructure of FDN, which I talked about at the beginning. But we are going to use the fiber, which has been put by an operator on behalf of the region. So the region, our money has been used to put fiber and high bandwidth in all the region. And so, why not using it, and why not providing access to people using this this infrastructure also? And so we are going to contact the this company, and we know they have a catalog of services, and everybody should be allowed to use it as it's paid by our taxes. It's a public network. So we are going to do this. I don't know yet when we are going to do this, but during this year we will have the first bricks of this thing, and some others are doing other stuff. I don't know. I'm just using ADSL and local infrastructure and so on. So it's possible. You have plenty of ways to provide access to the internet. You have plenty of opportunity to do this. At least that's what we have in France, and that's cool. So I don't know.
Just to get an idea, you said it's cheaper than you think, but how cheap is it? I mean, what do you have to... in France, how much did you actually have to go into to actually create an ISP at an initial level?
In France, using an existing infrastructure, the FDM1,
yeah.
So it would be use a good case in other places, but using their infrastructure, it costs basically nothing. We don't need any computer to run the ISP. So it costs nothing, but if you want to have your own infrastructure, so I'll take the example of what maybe we will be doing using the public network. It costs 200, I think something like 200 euros something like 100 euros to have to use the gate, the backhauling gate, which connects your subscribers to your equipment in the data center connected to the internet. So you have to pay this once, so something like 1,000 euros. Then your cost will be in transit to connect to the internet, plus the hosting in the data center. Plus the cost of the machines, you need something like two machines or just one if you use virtual machines and so on. So with two machines with 100 euros, you can have a package of 300 euros and you can start to provide access to the internet. 3,000 euros. Definitely not much, I think, in comparison to what we think is needed to provide access to the internet.
Yeah, I was going to ask if it's 100 or 1,000 or 10,000 euros to get started. So, I mean,
you can start with 3,000 euros. At least in France.
300 or 3,000?
3,000, sorry. Mixed 1,000 and 3,000.
Okay.
But it's not quite.
Yeah, of course.
Not that much and not that.
plus basically when you even when you start to run a hotspot at your home, you're technically already an internet service provider. So well, you could consider that buying a wireless access point making a hotspot.
Yeah,
we'll do the trick.
One important thing is that we provide to be called the internet service providers. We oblige ourselves to provide
quality of service. Not quality of SLAs or.
No, but to give a public IP, not just a NAT one behind your router. So we'll definitely provide public IPs to V4 and V6 to our subscribers. And of course, we are guaranteeing them network neutrality and so on. But we say that if the subscriber, the people at the end of the line, has a private IP, and that one is behind a wireless private network, it's not access to the internet. To access to the internet, you have to say that you are accessing the internet. You have to be part of it, and to be part of it, you have to have a public IP. That is one thing we definitely all do. So yes, you're providing services when you're giving access to the internet through your wireless hotspot, but if you're not giving a free, if you're not giving a public IP, people are just, they're just in your private network.
Yeah, but if you rely on a professional or an ISP dedicated for professionals, which provides many IPs for a single line, you can eventually provide multiple IPs for your sub customers.
Yeah, but it's not your IP, it's not your AS, no. So you don't take the responsibility selling them to our subscribers, which are members of the association. That's an important thing also. It's not a non-profit organization providing access to people outside the organization. It's you contributing to the organization, contributing to your own access to the internet by being part of the organization.
We call it cooperative.
Yes, yeah. That's it. And people are not geeks. There are people who don't have technical skills and are not computer engineers, but they contribute in different ways, like in free software, where you can help by translating things. You can just help by guiding people when they are lost, when they have questions and
internet issues.
So the group of 8 community ISPs that you mentioned, you said briefly that you have plans to federate your networks, and I was wondering if you could talk about that and how you plan to do that, and also why, but not why from a political standpoint. I think from a political standpoint it's very clear, but more why from a technical standpoint. It's kind of a trick question, because I'm trying to point out a problem, but I'd be interested to have that conversation.
When I say federate, it was more about talking with only one voice.
Okay.
But there are technical interests, and we are planning now to have one voice. And maybe if it's possible to share traffic and to peer between ourselves in the future, if it's possible. And the interest of being local is that at one moment we will be all around France and we'll be able to actually connect to each other. Mm. And so one interest is to not to be obliged between one provider in the southeast of France and one provider in the southwest to discuss to each other by passing to by Paris.
Yeah.
You see? So that's kind of internet is acentric. Yeah. There is no center. So why being obliged to go through Paris to communicate between two communities that are in the south of France? So, kind of silly. So that's one answer to this kind of keep internet acentric as more as possible.
So I've been talking with people. I'm from the States and been talking to various people about the possibility of sort of leasing dark fiber to connect up the various community wireless networks, which in many ways are similar. A lot of them don't have AS numbers. They're just sort of resellers from an upstream provider. And it would be much better if they were autonomous systems, which I think is sort of the direction in which we need to head.
It's not that difficult to be an autonomous system. Just fill a form to the local.
Well, in the States, I've sort of gone through.
Maybe it's more.
I've tried. It's a little. I mean, there are certainly costs involved. I think an AS assignment is 500, and then a block of addresses. It gets up to a few thousand, but again, that's not so much.
Yeah.
But some people are hesitant to do that. I think, especially for a small mesh network that they're not sure is gonna last.
Yes.
But
it's also difficult to get IPs now.
Yeah. Depending on which, depending on the region. Well, Aaron, the American registry, their standards for handing out V6 addresses are, oh, do you have V4 addresses? Which is kind of a silly way to do it, I think.
Actually, now they will hand you out V6 addresses even if you don't have.
They will.
Yeah, and they will be less stringent with those because they have plenty. We have tried to get IPv4 addresses, /21, which is 8 times 256 addresses. And they have been really annoying.
Yeah.
We have detailed the location plan for those IPs. We want to share them with the community, like other organizations and ISPs. And we made it clear that we would use all the IPs and everything, and that was sufficient for them because we already have 2/24, like 2 times 2 blocks, and we're not using them completely right now. But before we use them completely, like instead of using one and having to renumber everything,
yeah,
we just ditched the second one that we're not completely using, and for them that wasn't sufficient. So we need to completely use the IPs that we have, then we can get new IPs. So getting a completely new network out of the blue is going to be difficult. They're going to ask your provider first.
Yeah.
So ask your internet provider to allocate IPs to you, then come back to us if that's full and that's not enough for you. And so that is a lengthy process, and it makes it so that you don't own the IPs by default. The rules are very stringent, and it make it that in general you don't own your own IPs. It can take a long time to get there, and it's quite difficult in the States, in Canada to get those things underway. It's different. It's different from RIPE and Europe.
Okay, yeah. So you cannot build PI ranges.
We don't. The PI thing, I think, is kind of different. I always forget what it is because.
Provider independent.
Yeah, exactly. Like those kind of.
Don't know what is PI.
So like the PI addresses, I know people that have like legacy C blocks that they own that are provider independent, but like getting them now is hard. You need to have scale, and they give PA. They are gonna tell you, please get a provider. IPs from your provider first. Then, if your provider can't help you anymore, then you come to us. And it's a tendency toward centralization that's inherent. That makes it so our provider, when we came to him and told him like we're having trouble with Aaron, and they said, oh, just make numbers up. So we made numbers up, and that didn't work. And we came back to them, and they told us like, whatever, just we'll give you IPs. You know, we have plenty because they are used to making numbers up, and they are used to that process. So it makes it so that the higher you go, the bigger net blocks you get. So like HP and Apple, then they own lots of IPs, but the small providers are having a hard time getting those IPs. But I think that this part is not the difficult part. As sure. you were saying, the hard part is getting to the last mile. So if you have a community wireless, you have already done a lot of the hard things to deal with, and maybe you need to look at IPv6, or if you need IPv4 addresses, we can talk after. It's doable, it's just, it's a pain in the ass, and it's a lot of forms and ping pong with Aaron, and it's just stupid. It's very stupid.
So, the other part of my question was, you know, to federation to what end? Why are we federating networks when it seems that everything at the top of the network stack is still built in such a way that the logical patterns of the traffic are going to be centralized, even if there are local routes, and even if the network is decentralized, the way people actually use the network countermands that.
Artificial centers like Twitter, Facebook.
Yeah, exactly. So everything's going to be pinging back to Oregon or wherever anyways. So I bring it up to bring up the importance of a project like, say, Freedom Box, which will enable people to run their own services. And I think that anybody that's concerned about community networks and maintaining autonomy needs to be equally concerned with making sure that users and users that don't have a technical background are able to run their own services, because that's the only way we're going to be able to take advantage of local peering and stuff like that. So we need to fire on all cylinders, I think.
That's also an important thing. We have in FDN since the beginning. Members of the association explain to the subscribers who want an email address that they can have their home server, their own mail server at home and so on.
Yeah.
And the Freedom Box idea, actually in FDN, it exists since the beginning.
That's cool.
But maybe at the beginning, for 10 years easily, it's called the No Box. Never existed, but because nobody to put the dirt and actually do this. It's not that easy.
No.
This idea is all over what we are doing. It's
cool.
It's definitely that. It's to explain to people. To have a voice, also to explain to people that they can run their own services. They can, as they are their own internet provider, by being part of the organization, they can also be their own hosting services. They can have their website hosted behind their lines, and they can host their own mail servers and so on. Jabber instead of MSN and so on. You can install Jasper now, if you like Jasper instead of Facebook and so on. So it's, we definitely are explaining this all along.
Cool. So do you have people on your networks that are running their own services? I mean, I'm sure it's a mix, but what are you finding in the field? Are people willing to do it, or is it still way too hard for most people?
It's kind of hard.
Yeah.
But there are some who understand the importance of this. And even if they don't have the skills, they you can visualize, you can decide that your mail will be hosted by your friend also in the association and so on. So you're not depending on Google. And
yeah.
So, there are many ways for people that don't have the technical skills to weigh the balance.
I think it's kind of hard to evaluate concerning the FDN customers, for instance, because it's mainly a geeky audience.
Yeah.
There are many people in FDN who are not geeks, who are just people who are interested in having a non-profit running the internet access.
Yeah, well,
it's not the majority, but it's definitely. It's not geeks.
I wanted to answer the question about price that was raised earlier, because we have I have looked at this in Canada and it's different than in Europe and in France actually. Because in France there was a lot of deregulation where people and companies and organizations had suddenly access to the data centers where the copper wires from your house goes in, or what, like fiber or whatever. But they started to have access to the COs. And this is fairly cheap in France. In Canada, there is a oligopoly. So there's five providers that control the whole market across Canada, maybe two or three in Quebec, where I come from. And those people fix their own prices with the federal regulation, or the equivalent of the FCC, called the CRTC. And that organization is basically working for the companies. They're corrupt and they always raise the prices for reselling equipment. So first off, it's very hard to get into the data center and put your equipment there. You're always reselling the bandwidth from the providers. And the way it works is that they give you a tunnel. So they tunnel the traffic from the provider to your data center through an L2TP tunnel, or the technical terms, I think. And then you get, then you provide, you like, for example, in my home connection, my copper wire goes in Montreal, but my traffic goes out of Toronto. Like, so when I dress route, I don't see Montreal, which is kind of strange, but it's the way it works. There's a tunnel. And my provider pays bandwidth for the internet, but in theory, he doesn't pay bandwidth to the reselling company, to Bell Canada. Recently, Bell Canada wanted to change that. They wanted to charge the reselling ISPs for the bandwidth. So the ISPs would have to pay twice for the bandwidth, the bandwidth from Bell and then the bandwidth to the internet, which created an uproar and people fought against this. So it's less likely to happen now, but it's the general tendency of the CRTC to collaborate with those companies and give them what they want. Selling rights without the bandwidth, just getting access to the tunnel with Bell Canada, it's $30 a month, which is about what you pay when you go in Bell Canada as a regular customer. So it's like 28, and Bell Canada charges like 30. Okay. So if you want to compete with Bell Canada as a reseller, you need to go at 30, which means that you have $2 per month of profit, of actual money coming in your pocket to pay for staff, an office, bandwidth, and $2 per month for bandwidth. I don't know if you guys know a bit, but it gives you less than 1 megabit. So it's completely nonsensical. It's absolutely impossible to do that, but some people do. There are mostly companies that are doing that, and they work by having lots of customers and averaging out so that they can achieve some level of profitability. So it's very hard to start also. There is one community provider that I know in Montreal that's a co-op, but it's also the first ISP in Montreal that ever existed. So it's still there, but it's a cooperative, but it's kind of cooperative. It's a bit bizarre. And for fiber, we looked at prices to lay fiber down or rent dark fiber between two places in Montreal. And it was about $700 per month, to give you an idea. And that's in an urban center. So the prices are very high. It's very hard to compete with the biggest companies. And you somehow need to do that. You can't sell like internet to people at $100 a month. It's not going to do them a service. I'm part of an organization that's called UQBM. That's Un Québec branché sur le monde, which as an objective has to bring internet to people in remote regions in Quebec that don't have access to the internet right now, which is quite common once you step out of Montreal, because Quebec is fucking big and they have roads, but they don't, like, they have telephone and that's it. Because the big companies like Bell don't see a profit in going there, because the largest part of the market is filled. So we are doing stuff like pilot projects with Wi-Fi to ping big towers in the center of the town that has DSL and then rebroadcast this to the remote places. It's really hard, it's expensive, doesn't work very well, but it's getting out there. And in Quebec, there was a project, I think 5 or 10 years ago, to put fiber everywhere in Quebec. There was called the Villages Connected, or something like that, the Village Branché, Connected Villages. And so the Quebec government sponsored that, and it was like, ooh, we're going to put fiber everywhere. And the end result of that was to have in every mayor office, you know, every town hall has now a computer connected to fiber, running Windows 95, and that is the initiative. And very often that fiber is leased from private companies. So there is a political struggle to be fought there to say, fuck that, this is our fiber, and it needs to be accessible to community providers or even private companies, but it is state-owned and it should be utilized and not sitting like this for nothing. Because it's present and it's a struggle we want to lead, but it's kind of hard because the political climate in Canada is very conservative in general, and those progressive, like, oh, the state should do things to the people it's serving and collecting taxes from, is kind of a, oh, you're a communist idea and you're from the 50s. So it's hard. That's where I'm coming from.
I think the situation's similar in the States, where most of the fiber, much of the fiber, maybe not most, but much of the fiber that was laid with taxpayer money, but the access is restricted to private for-profit companies.
Where it's owned by private companies.
Yeah, these companies got subsidies to lay fiber, which they own, which seems somehow unfair. but I think the other political battle, aside from gaining access to fiber, which we helped pay for, is regaining access to EM spectrum that's been auctioned off. Because I think the wireless model plays an important role in community networks, but the public access bands 2.4 and 5.8 are more and more polluted, less, I mean, in rural areas it's still a viable model, but if you're talking about an urban center, you know, trying to do anything in 2.4 gigahertz is pretty much impossible. You know, I get 50 networks when I open my machine in Brooklyn. So it's like, if we had access to more of the spectrum, 3650 is useful too in the States. I don't know what, it'd be interesting to hear what different policies exist globally for magnetic spectrum. One of the things I'd really like to see us do politically is fight for more open spectrum.
There is currently something at the European Commission to liberalize the EM spectrum. So the La Quadrature du Net, which is just right here,
sure,
is actually pushing for this to pass, because we also estimate that it's really important to get this.
Great.
And definitely we have, I discussed this with Felix from La Quadrature, and we agreed that we as a federation, as operators in France, have to think about what we will be doing with an open spectra, mm-hmm, open electromagnetic spectra, and to add to our speech this kind of thing. And we discussed this something like 1 month ago, and there was a discussion in the regulation authority in France around this question. And if I remember correctly, one of our small ISPs took part of the discussions on this subject. So yes, it's one thing we have to move forward and continue to.
Yeah.
That's definitely interesting.
To pay for more senseless wars is what it looks like, basically. Sorry, by the way.
One thing that I think is certainly possible to do in certain areas is to just do whatever is needed and operate.
Yeah.
You can build your own devices if they do not exist and operate on whatever fucking frequency you want.
Yeah.
And if you provide a valuable service to the community and then the FCC comes around and says, you're not allowed to do that, then the community is going to say, you're not allowed to do that. Like, we are having radio, we're having the internet, we're having phone services. This is our lives you're talking about, and those guys have been doing this for the last 5 years, and you can't shut us down.
I think this spectrum is at least stateside, I think, the biggest opportunity that I see for civil disobedience and for getting people really engaged more actively is to do exactly that, to start, you know, we've got GNU Radio, we've got OpenBTS, we've got the open technology to run a cell tower, right? So, like, we can do it and then see what the people like better. And I think, to me, it's obvious what they would choose, but maybe I'm naive or something.
This happens